Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the programs to my brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam. So, dear friends, in this truly universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam, it is interesting, but despite all of the different sessions that we have had up to this point discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali, peace and blessings upon him, we find that there is still so much we can talk about when it comes to Imam Ali's persona being truly universal. And so it is unanimously agreed, both among the Shia scholars and the Sunni scholars, and even the non-Muslim scholars, that Imam Ali was the most pious man of his time. And he was so pious in his time that he had divorced the world 3 times, meaning he had completely renounced the world. Now, for some of our listeners who might not understand this statement or this remark of divorcing the world 3 times, just to explain this a little bit. So, in the jurisprudence, in the fiqh or the ahkam, the Islamic rules and regulations, the laws and commandments of Allah, the Mighty, the Exalted, we find that in the religion of Islam, you are allowed to have a divorce for a maximum of 3 times. So very interesting, I know it's a little bit of a tangent, but it seems to be important. In other religions, we will find that you only have the option cut from a little bit of a tangent. So in Islam, you can be married and then have a divorce, then be married, then have a divorce, then be married, and then have a divorce the 3rd time. Now, this 3rd time that you have a divorce, you cannot go and marry the same individual again. And so here, Imam Ali, alayhi salam, peace and blessings upon him, he has this famous statement where he says that he has divorced the world 3 times, meaning his piety and his God consciousness, his awareness of God, his awareness of Allah, was to an extent where he had divorced the world 3 times over, meaning a divorce, a separation, a going of different ways where one cannot return. Imam Ali taught humanity that truly, if you want to move towards Allah, if you want to communicate with Allah, if you want to have a strong relationship with God, then you must disassociate yourself from the world. You cannot love the world. As the famous saying goes, and the Holy Quran says, that man has not been created with 2 hearts in his chest. Breaking away from the world if we want to become pious, a profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother. My name is Muhammad. After returning from the Battle of Siffin, Imam Ali gave certain pieces of advice to one of his sons. Historians consider him to be Imam Hassan alayhi salam, while others are of the opinion that he was Muhammadul Hanafiya. He wrote this letter in the form of a will. They deal with almost every aspect of life, which goes a long way to make a man successful in life, brave, humane, generous, virtuous, and pious. Today, I'm going to read to you an excerpt from the last will of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. My dear son, you must not allow uncertainties and doubt poison your mind. Skepticism or irrational likes and dislikes should not affect your views. But remember that before you start thinking and deliberating over a problem, seek guidance of the Lord and beseech Him to give you a lead in the right direction. Avoid confusion in your ideas, and do not let disbelief take hold of your mind, because the first will lead you to agnosticism and the others towards errors and sins. When you are thus prepared to solve any problem, and you are sure that you possess a clear mind, a sincere and firm desire to reach the truth, to say the correct thing, and to do the correct deed, then carefully go through the advice that I am leaving for you. If your mind is not clear, and it is not as free from doubts as you wish it to be, then you'll be wandering in the wilderness of uncertainties and errors, like a camel suffering from night blindness. Under these circumstances, it is best for you to give up the quest, because with such limitations, none can ever reach the truth.
Now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. And I would like to begin with this very question about Amir al-Mu'mineen. And the question about who is Ali is actually a very simple question. What I want to answer tonight is the question of what is Ali. There is a difference between who is Ali and what is Ali. There is another hadith narrated by 24 companions of the Prophet. And this is narrated by Shia and Sunni sources alike, where the Prophet says, Aliyun ma'al haqq, wal haqq ma'a Aliyun. Ali is with the truth, and the truth is with Ali. Now, when we talk about this hadith, sometimes we get the question where the Prophet said the same thing about Ammar bin Yasir. Ammar is with Haq, and Haq is with Ammar. Remember, Ammar is a disciple of Ali. He is a student of Ali, who gave his life for the love of Ali in the Battle of Siffin. There is a difference in what the Prophet said about Ammar. In case of Ammar, he just said, you know, Ammar is ma'al haqq, wal haqq ma' Ammar. Ammar is with haqq, and haqq is with, the truth is with Ammar. When it comes to Ali bin Abi Talib, Rasulullah did something else there. After saying, Aliyun ma'al haqq, wal haqq ma' Aliyin, the Prophet prays to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allahumma adril haqq ma' Aliyin haysu ma dar. Not only that Ali is with Haq and Haq is with Ali, the Prophet prays to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that, O Allah, turn haq in whatever direction that Ali is turning. It's not that you have haq there as a standard and then may you measure Ali. Is he on haq or batil? No. That is when you will measure Ammar, Salman, Miqdad, and others. When it comes to Ali, the issue is not, you know, measuring him with the haq. Rather, Rasulullah says, praying to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that Allah turn haq in whatever direction that Ali turns. And this is where we see that in spite of all these things. You know, we are really surprised.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
The light.
Technology plays an important role in our daily lives. This time, a French company has introduced a device to help the visually impaired to avoid obstacles. The smart electronic device detects obstacles and warns users with a beep. People with vision loss can install it on the top of their canes and receive information through headphones. The gadget helps people to dodge barriers on the ground and above that, for example, the open door of a truck.
If you hear the sound to the right, it means that the obstacle is on the right. If it is straight ahead, the obstacles are in front of you. So you change course according to what you hear. If you hear an obstacle to the left, you go to the right, and this way you can go around the obstacle.
The device costs around $2,300 and is now being used by hundreds of people in Belgium, France, Germany, Italy, and Switzerland. Most of us know the feeling of being moved by a work of art. Well, a cause of art artist tries to make us understand a form of political discourse through a mosaic of outgoing German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Alkan Bozagur has made a Merkel mosaic from seeds. The artist says he wished to thank the German leader for having been an example for all the women of the world. He says his work is also a tribute to the towering lady for the support she had given to his country, which declared its independence in 2008. Bozagur was doing his work on the same day Germans were voting in the general elections to choose a successor to Merkel. Alkan Bozagur holds two Guinness World Records for his giant mosaics made with seeds.
Wally the Walrus has risen to fame with his extensive travels around Europe. Now the giant mammal has added Iceland to his list of trips. Wally has previously visited France, Spain and the UK. His last known location before Iceland was Ireland. Scientists were not sure at first if they had indeed seen Wally, but Seal Rescue Ireland recognized him from scars on his front flippers. The wandering walrus is 4 years old and weighs about a ton. He has covered a distance of around 5,000 kilometers in his recent trips. Wally is now on his way towards his home in the Arctic. A French zoo has had a very productive year, welcoming multiple new animals into its collection. Two pumas, two jaguars, nine Peruvian squirrel monkeys, and even rarer macaque twins are new additions to Lemingne Zoo this summer. The animals were bred as part of a program designed to maintain and promote the conservation of endangered species. Once they reach the breeding age, these animals will be transported to other zoos to help boost the population of their species.
Now, a museum in Russia's Kaliningrad has unveiled a special exhibition to the public. It would not be exactly wrong to call the artworks out of trash. All the works exhibited are made of rubbish. The exhibition is showcasing a wide array of objects, including sculptures, musical instruments, robots, and costumes. The project was designed with the aim of raising awareness about recycling. People visiting the exhibition were delighted by the creative use of garbage. Only 7% of waste is recycled in Russia each year, while a vast amount of trash is stored in landfills.
An Egyptian artist is making incredibly tiny statues of famous historical figures and landmarks on pencil tips. 30-year-old Ibrahim Balala is based in the city of Rashid, south of Cairo. He has mastered the art of crafting miniature sculptures. Ibrahim mostly creates statues of Egyptian pharaohs, but Islamic, Greek, and Roman figures also feature in his portfolio. The artist received some criticism when he first ventured on his art, but he persevered and rose to prominence with his minuscule statues. Ibrahim's dream is to open a museum of miniature sculptures someday.
Fourteen lucky penguins have been returned to the seas off the Atlantic coast of Argentina after rehabilitating them from malnutrition and hypothermia. The Magellanic penguins waddled back happily into the chilly waters once they were released. They were distressed, malnourished, and dehydrated when they were found by conservationists in February. There are an estimated 2 to 3 million Magellanic penguins in the world. The cute birds are named after Portuguese explorer Ferdinand Magellan. They are mostly found around Argentina and Chile.
Another groundbreaking archaeological discovery in Peru is now catching attention. 800-year-old human remains south of the capital, Lima, highlight the ancient burial rituals in the South American country. The remains of 8 adults and children buried in a common tomb were found by a group of workers laying gas pipes at the site. They were buried with food, dishes, and musical instruments, including flutes. Archaeologists say that the 8 people lived in the ancient town of Chilca, some 60 kilometers from Lima. They say some of the bodies were buried with the shells on their heads and had bags with cocoa leaves inside them. They say the discovery will shed more light on the pre-Hispanic history of the region. Another 30 human remains had been discovered in Chilca in 2018.
A taxi company in Thailand has turned its vehicles into mini vegetable gardens to help its drivers who are out of work due to the coronavirus pandemic.
The point of this project is so that employees have something to do to reduce stress. To a certain extent, it has helped with reducing our stress, but it isn't really the answer to the situation right now. Even though the drivers and the staff are able to harvest the vegetables for food, it's just part of solving the problem. I think the government should also step in to help us too.
The taxi company is growing vegetables on the roofs and hoods of 300 disused taxis that are parked idly. Prolonged COVID-19 lockdowns have affected the drivers' income negatively so that they are unable to pay the lease of their vehicles. Therefore, working in these gardens has reduced their stress and provided the drivers and their families with food.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trendy news, and more from every corner of the world.
Amongst the thousands of shops in Tehran's Grand Bazaar lies a tiny tea house with a long history that attracts visitors with its famous treats. Haj Ali Darvish Tea House is the smallest and oldest tea house in the Iranian capital. The two-meter-wide cafe belongs to 63-year-old Kazim Maputian, who took over the century-old business from his father. He serves a wide range of teas, but his signature is the Tea of Kindness, a mixture of mint, lemon, and saffron. His tea house is the most famous in Tehran, serving some 200 customers every day. It used to be a tourist attraction before the coronavirus pandemic. Haj Ali Darvish Tea House was enlisted as Iran's intangible cultural heritage in 2016. Farmers working on the border between Venezuela and Colombia have discovered a tusk that is believed to belong to an American mastodon from 16,000 years ago.
We went to the place and the fossil was there, and then we realized it was something very important. We rescued it because there was a risk of it being lost, and at this moment it's in the Archaeological and Paleontological Museum of Agualinda.
The experts say the discovery would help them with complementing information about extinct animals and ancient settlements. They say the finding of the tusk in the site would increase its potential contribution to scientific researchers. The discovery of mega faunal fossils in South America has been common over the past decades. In 2019, more than 800 mammoth bones were discovered near Mexico. A group of Cambodian students has designed a manned drone in an attempt to beat traffic. The drone has 8 propellers and a school chair for the pilot's seat. It can carry a human weighing up to 60 kilograms. The creative students say the drone is still in its early stages of development and testing. Equipped with 4 batteries, the human carrier drone can fly up to 4 meters and around 10 minutes above the ground.
Here we have big problems related to traffic jams, so we did some research about this before building the drone. We came up with this drone project as we had the idea that we wanted to solve some problems for our society by making a drone taxi, as well as investing drones for firefighters to help put out fires.
The prototype has cost around $20,000 to build. The designers say they need 2 more years to complete the project. The school has expressed hope that the drone could be used in everyday life.
Iran's capital Tehran has hosted an art show themed with Aspiration for Peace. Organized by the Economic Cooperation Organization, the event seeks to shed light on the beauty of a global peace through the language of art. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Each one of these delicate works of art are created by an artist from a different country, each trying a unique way to highlight the need for lasting peace in the world. Dubbed Aspiration for Peace, the art gallery is organized by Echo Cultural Institute with the aim of promoting global peace through the language of art.
By holding this event, we want to send a message of peace to all countries. We invited diplomats from all embassies here to gather and unite and celebrate a peaceful gathering. Also, the artworks showcased here are created by artists from various countries, and this represents how beautiful it is for nations to live peacefully.
Art helps connect different civilizations and nations. It helps us bridge the cultural gaps and find commonalities. This will establish mutual understanding and harmony among nations, and therefore conflicts can be avoided.
In some of the artworks, images immediately communicate with the audience, even if faces are veiled. These pictures try to narrate the story of Afghan women and an uncertain future that they're facing amid the Taliban's takeover of power in Afghanistan.
The events that are taking place in my country, Afghanistan, are so painful. It might take hours to tell you how hard it is for an Afghan girl to live in insecurity and uncertainty. But through the language of art, you can understand all these words without the need for translation.
The art show was held on the occasion of the International Day of Peace, observed every year on September 21st. The occasion was introduced by the UN General Assembly as a chance to strengthen the ideals of peace through observing 24 hours of nonviolence and ceasefire.
A picture is worth a thousand words, and indeed, no words can be as strong as the strokes of an artist in speaking the beauty of peace. And this is how the universal language of art transcends the political and cultural boundaries and touches the hearts of viewers, no matter what language they speak. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
French slackliner has wowed watching crowds in Paris by crossing from the Eiffel Tower to the other side of the River Seine. Nathan Poulain walked across a rope suspended 70 meters above the ground. He finished the 600-meter course in half an hour. On one point, he sat and lay on the rope before arriving at his destination, the Chaliot Theater. The 27-year-old daredevil practiced 4 years to perform this show. Poulain said that he was staying focused during the walk, and that was very challenging.
When I was young, I had fear of heights, and I learned to contain it. During the performance, I really didn't feel it. I really didn't have that problem. I felt some stress over starting it, but no vertigo, no.
Poulain said that it was an uneasy experience, but he was happy to share it with the public. The athlete started slacklining 10 years ago. In 2019, he performed a 510-meter-long walk between two skyscrapers in Paris.
Visitors and keepers of a zoo in the Peruvian capital, Lima, are thrilled over the birth of 8 baby penguins from the vulnerable Humboldt species. Zookeepers say the chicks were hatched in July and they're expecting 6 more additions later in October. Currently, the newborns spend their days resting in their nests and being fed by their parents. The Huachipa Zoo currently has 42 Humboldt penguins and is working on recovering the species population.
We have 8 2-month-old chicks and 6 eggs. In 42 days, those eggs will hatch and the chicks will come out. The important thing about Humboldt penguins is that we are recovering their population because they are in a vulnerable state. We are increasing their populations with the breeding we are doing in the zoo.
Researchers say a maximum of less than 10,000 Humboldt penguins are left in the wild, with their population size undergoing extreme fluctuations. The species face emerging threats from agricultural activities to their own vulnerability to predators. The Humboldt penguins are only found along the Pacific coast of Chile and Peru and are enlisted as threatened species by the International Union for Conservation of Nature.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed, smiling he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jalad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. This program, Islamic Laws, we are going to talk about the Islamic laws related to purity according to Ayatollah Sistani. But before that, let's take a listen to a short biography.
The Grand Ayatollah Sistani comes from the family of scholars and pious men. He learned theological and rational sciences from many eminent and well-known religious scholars. At the age of five, His Eminence started learning the Holy Quran. He was then admitted in a religious center for reading, writing, and for learning basic mathematics and geography. In the beginning of 1360 Hijri, he started studying basic Hausa lessons. He also studied a number of books on philosophy like Sharh Manzuma Sabzawari and Sharh Ishraq. Meanwhile, he attended Kharij lectures by the late Mirza Mehdi Ashtiani and the late Mirza Hashim Qazvini. In the late 1368 Hijri, he migrated to Qum to accomplish his studies in fiqh and usul. His Eminence left Qum for Najaf al-Ashraf. On having arrived in Najaf, he began attending Qayatullah Khoi and Sheikh Hussain Hilli's lectures in jurisprudence and the fundamentals of jurisprudence. In 1380 Hijri, Ayatollah Sistani traveled back to his hometown, the holy city of Mashhad, expecting to stay and settle down there. In the same year, he was awarded a permit by Imam Al-Khoi and another by Sheikh Hilli, certifying that he had attained the level of ijtihad, that is, deduction of legal judgment in matters of religion.
We are talking about purity-related laws according to Ayatollah Sistani, and last time, in the last episode, in the last part, I asked you a question whether it is permissible or impermissible to keep a dog or a cat. And we were just halfway through when the program came to an end. Would you talk about the permissibility or impermissibility of keeping a cat? Because you talked about the dog, and it is, you said, permissible as long as you keep a dog, like, not in the house, but in for reasonable purposes, right?
Yeah, of course.
But as long as indoor, in fact, keeping the dog is concerned, you said it is impermissible. All right,
yeah,
but what about the cats?
Well, cats are not najis. You can keep cats, but cats are cat hair actually can make can create problem, because if there are cat hair on your cat hairs on your body or on your clothes, they will affect your prayer. Ayatollah Sistani's opinion is slightly different from the opinions held by other religious authorities. He says that if there are more than three strands of hair,
yes,
more than three strands of hair, then your prayer will be affected, meaning that your prayer will become void.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but if there are three strands of hair, or two, or one, and you can still go on praying. Mm-hmm. Okay. And in order to make sure that...
But basically, it is permissible to keep a cat as long as you don't have, like, the cat's hair, like, all around.
Yes. Cat hair is not something you can control. You can do anything about it, okay? Because cats do fall, and the cat's hair do fall everywhere around you in the house. And, of course, if you keep vacuuming your house every day, that's safer. Mm-hmm. But when offering prayers, you must make sure that there's no cat hair on your clothes. Okay, if there are two or three strands of cat hair on your body, your prayer is okay. There is no problem in your prayer. It will be valid. But if there are...
By shaking the clothes, like in the air, that would be a safer way to get rid of the cat's hair, right?
You know, it's kind of sticky. It sticks to your clothes and without you knowing it. But okay, if you do know that there are cat hair on your clothes,
right?
There is cat hair on your clothes, your prayer is valid, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because you do know and you are actually sure that there wasn't any hair.
But if you come to realize that there are some, like...
Yeah. If you just came to know after you have prayed that there were some, let's say, more than three strands of hair, you don't have to repeat your prayers.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
It's still valid.
Yeah, the prayers are still valid. The same is true with anything else. Like, for example, if you didn't know that your clothes were impure,
mm-hmm.
your clothes were impure, and you offered your prayers without you knowing that your clothes was impure, your prayers is valid. You don't have to repeat your prayer.
Yes. Let's take a break, and we'll be discussing more about these issues related to Islamic laws concerning purity according to Ayatollah Sistani. Stay with us.
The office of Ayatollah Sistani is currently providing the following services. 1. Board of Istifta, replying to religious questions. 2. Helping the poor, needy, homeless, and those who have suffered losses by earthquakes and floods. 3. Sending books for people who want to understand and learn Islam. 4. Hajj delegation. 5. Sending preachers. Board of Istifta is a link between Ayatollah Sistani and people. It provides them with answers to questions pertaining to religious, ideological, social, and educational matters in accordance with the verdicts and rulings of Ayatollah Sistani. For more information, visit the website of Ayatollah Sistani at www.sistani.org. You can also ask your questions through the following email, english@sistani.org.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Sheikh Javid, we are talking about purity-related laws according to Ayatollah Sistani, and I asked you a question regarding permissibility or impermissibility of keeping a cat. And let me ask a quite pertinent question related to the previous one. What about cat's urine and its feces? Are they impure?
Well, that's a good question. Generally speaking, wild animals whose meat is haram, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Their urine and their feces are najis, impure, okay? Whether it is a cat you keep inside your house, or whether it is let's say a tamed wild cat like leopards, tigers, and these animals which some people keep in their houses, or let's say it's just a rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
A rabbit is haram to meat to eat. Even though some Sunni Muslims or most Sunni Muslims, or let's say all Sunni Muslims eat rabbit meat, but according to Islamic Sharia, of course, rabbit is haram, and therefore its urine, its feces are impure. Okay.
And even I've heard that they divide the rabbit into two types. They say the halal type and the haram type. So the rabbit is haram.
It's haram
altogether.
Yeah, it's haram. So there's a general law: whatever animal whose meat is haram to eat, haram to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's slaughtered according to Islamic law.
Yes.
Like, let's say, wolf. Wolf is clean, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It is, it's not najis. But its meat is haram to eat.
Yes.
It's not permissible. It's urine and it is feces or najis. And therefore, if your clothes or your body comes in contact with its feces or urine, you have to wash it off.
I see. The other question is very interesting, Sheikh. We all know that there are several purifying agents.
Yes.
Considered and recognized in Islam by all authorities, religious authorities, right?
Yeah.
And one of them being the earth.
Yeah.
Okay? So it is one of the purifying agents. Following the example of shoes sole, when it becomes dirty or ritually impure,
yeah,
one can walk simply on the earth, right?
Yes, 15.
To purify the shoes, right? So is it possible if we extend this law, this rule, to the car tires?
That's a good question. Ayatollah Sistani says that tires cannot be made pure. Yes, if you drive on a road, no matter how what distance you cover driving, okay, the tires won't become pure. So therefore, in order to purify the tires which have become impure, you need to wash them. And there's no other way to purify them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the rule which applies to the shoes does not apply to the tires.
Yes. And the other question quite related to this, I've noticed that some people consider the natural earth as the purifying agent, not the asphalt. Is that true?
That's not the case, you know?
Like if you walk on the soil,
which is
like not being processed by chemical or physical stuff like the asphalt, or if you walk on the asphalt, some people consider it impure still.
Ayatollah Sistani does not, let's say...
Distinguish
between asphalt. If you walk on the road, which is, of course, let's say...
Asphalted.
Paved.
Yes.
Okay, with asphalt. Yes. Still, the shoes become pure.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And it does not make a matter whether you walk on pure soil.
Yes.
Or you walk on pebbles or sand or on
stones.
The road, on stones.
Even if marbles, which have been like carved in the factories.
Marbles.
Like marbles, yeah.
Marble, I have to consult the office of the Lasistani when it comes to marbles, because marble is different, you know. And when it comes to roads, Ayatollah said roads are paved with asphalt, you know.
I see.
The same ruling applies.
Okay? I see.
And the sole of your shoe becomes pure if it was najis.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. That was the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
With IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked and
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by famous Iranian Shiite orator and lecturer, Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
May Allah bless the soul of the late Ayatollah Mujtahidi Tehrani. Once he asked his master and teacher, the late Grand Ayatollah Sayyid Ahmad Khansari, about the true conducts for visiting the tombs of the infallibles and how to formulate our wordings in our prayers before the shrines. He asks Ayatollah Khansari, in visiting the tomb of the great men of Allah and supplicating towards them, which method is better? To ask Allah and attest Him through naming an infallible, or ask Allah directly to answer our prayers? The late Sayyid Khansari's answer was that both of his manners are great. Whether you ask an infallible saint of Allah to ask Allah to answer prayers, or you yourself ask Allah directly to do so. However, if you, in the shrine of a masoom or the descendant of a masoom, ask him or her to be the link between you and Allah, it would be better. Even you can go to the tombs of the great men of Allah who were not infallible and ask their soul to be the bridge between you and Allah. This statement of the late Grand Ayatollah Mujtahidi Tehrani as quoting his master and teacher, the late Grand Ayatollah Sayyid Ahmad Khansari, shows that even the great men of Allah, lower in rank than the infallibles, can help us achieve the answer to our prayers, and we must not be inattentive towards them or visiting their shrines. In other words, these individuals are more compatible to us in terms of spirituality, so our souls can be connected more easily through prayers and supplications. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Fi amanallah.
Justice in the school of thought of late Muhammad Ridha Hakimi is the absolute justice. Justice for all the world. Justice for human being. So when Allama Hakimi is trying to give this justice, he says that I should drive out this justice from ayat and rivayat.
Maktab Tafkik is holding this view that we have to separate between these three. Philosophy, mysticism, and religion, meaning Quran and Ahadith. Okay. So when someone wants to seek the truth, he cannot benefit from the other two approaches, meaning Irfan and philosophy, because these two school of thought are man-made and they are subject to errors.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in The Teacher.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is The Teacher. I'm your host, Atta. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Mahdavi and Shaykh Ziaini. Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh Mahdavi, and welcome to your show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Shaykh Ziaini, assalamu alaikum, and welcome to your show, The Teacher.
Wa alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, we are still talking about the late Muhammad Reza Hakimi. Recently, we missed this outstanding man. August 22nd, 2021 is the day that he passed away. A polymath, a bellatrix, a mujtahid, and a scholar in the field of Quran and Hadith, whose mainly works were concerned with the social reformation and social justice. That's why the late Muhammad Reza Hakimi is called as the thinker or a scholar who is after justice in the society. Sheikh Ziaunia, we know that the late Muhammad Reza Hakimi belongs to a group of thinkers or scholars who are called as Maktab Ma'arifi Khurasan or the Tafkik, we can say a school of thought. Give us some information about this school of thought and the late Hakimi as belonging to this group of people.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Every school of thought is consisted of different scholars and figures. Some are founders of the school of thought and the others are the followers of that school of thought.
That's right.
The late Allama Muhammad Reza Hakimi is the follower of the school of thought of Tafkik. The founder is Ayatollah Mirza Mehdi Isfahani.
That's right.
And you know, the school of thought of Tafkik is a very broad school of thought.
That's right.
Different generations beside different ideas itself.
That's
for
right.
example, we have some figures in this school of thought that are like a late Allama Hakimi,
okay.
that was a friend of late Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh.
That's right.
But beside this, you know, friendship, they are having some, you know, differences in their ideas. For
That's
example,
right.
late Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, was believing in Irfan, in mysticism, and in philosophy. Late Allama Hakimi was not believing in that, but he was aiding the Islamic revolution
of Iran.
He was aiding even Ayatollah Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi.
That's right.
And when Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, was in prison at the era of the king, I mean, Pahlavi king, late Allama Hakimi and his teachers, they moved from Mashhad to come to Tehran and want to help Ayatollah Khomeini.
That's right.
So, you know, this is a friendship between them, besides having different ideas.
Ideas.
This is a type of scholars in the school of thought of Tafkik.
The peaceful coexistence
yes.
that exists between different scholars of Islam.
Yes.
Okay, very good.
But unfortunately, there are some extremists also in these two different schools of thought. I mean the school of thought of Urafa, that
yes.
they believe in Irfan and mysticism beside Ahadith and Ayat.
That's right.
And also in the school of thought of Tafkik.
That's right.
That they believe that, okay, we have to only follow Ayat and Rivayat, and we are not allowed to accept Irfan or mysticism or philosophy that is falsafa.
That's right.
So we have to take these issues in consideration and be aware of the subjects like that, that, okay, late Allama Hakimi was a person of Maktab Tafkik.
Yes.
But he was not, you know, giving blasphemy or addressing blasphemous words toward other
yes.
scholars.
Yes.
So being a Tafkiki person does not mean that, okay, I'm completely against rationalism.
That's right.
No, this is not correct.
Okay.
Being a Tafkiki person is not meaning that I should stand against every figure who believes in philosophy.
That's right.
And be an enemy of him.
Mm-hmm.
No, this is not the meaning. So if we see that someone or a figure is standing against our scholars who are believing in philosophy and unfortunately in Al-Dawillah are cursing upon
yes.
them, these, you know, issues are extremism in Tafkik.
For sure, the late Muhammad Reza Hakimi was not an extremist.
For sure, yes.
For sure, he was, in the message of the condolence that was given by the leader of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei, he is referred to as a person who was devoid any type of arrogance or love for this world. At the same time, I think that the late Muhammad Reza Hakimi, as you said, was following his school of thought in which he belonged to, that is Tafkik. But Sheikh Mahtavi, what type of thinking is the Tafkiki type of thinking?
Actually, to respond to this question, we have to say that with respect to different generations of Tafkik, the response is different.
Okay.
For example, when we study the first generation of Tafkiki people, we see the one who has initiated this school of thought, which is Mirza Mahdi Isfahani, he is totally against philosophy and mantiq and logic.
That's right.
So based on his understanding, even one single premises cannot help us with respect to understanding or getting